Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and Babette ate oatmeal. And you crushed that girl, Jaff Owen.
Hi again. Oh, that was a nice week.
what a long week it's been.
Oh, yeah. It's been a long week where I've just spent the whole week listening to Edward Herman audiobooks.
We've all learned much more about Edward Herman. No, in reality, we walked around the block, got a bagel, which I struggled to eat in front of you. And it made me realise, I was like, oh yeah, we don't know each other that well yet. Joff doesn't realise that I can't eat a sandwich without it ending up over the lower half of my face. And now we're back.
Yep.
and I should say that our lovely audio engineer said, oh, I just assumed that because the first one went on so long that you were done. I was like, yeah, no.
Then you've got another one, same length.
Same length, until they kick us out of here. Still four more guys to get through. So in our first episode, we talked about Dean, psychopath, Christopher, unreliable, Logan, condescending, butt-faced miscreant, and Richard, the original man. Now we're about to talk about four more men in this world of Stars Hollow, and we're coming in hot. Number four, it's Jess.
It is. He's the bad boy.
The bad boy.
Except
of Stars
he's not
Hollow.
Really that bad.
No.
When you watch it now, like, it's weird that he's set up as the bad boy.
Okay, so I think his pranks are pathetic. his misdeeds, like, ooh, he drew a chalk outline outside Dosey's. Like, okay.
Yeah.
They suck, but I think in terms of his attitude is genuinely horrible. Like, when he accuses Lorelai of sleeping with Luke.
Yeah, I mean, he's quite unpleasant.
Yeah.
Really, to everyone, apart from Rory.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in that way, he is quite a bad boy. Mm-hmm. I suppose. His magic.
It's close-up magic.
Not really a bad boy trait. James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause doing magic.
Yeah, no, it's so weird. There's a bit in The Gilmore Guys, a podcast that I trash-talked last week, but I actually do think is good sometimes, where they said that Jess is the end result of a focus group on bad boys. And like one person just went, magic? And they were like, sure, magic, right?
Yeah, he is like, if someone had read the description of what a bad boy would be like, but never actually seen, you know, they're like, that's, I know what I wear, I know what I do. And then they stumble across magic and they're like, yeah, I think they'd be magic.
Yeah. Right. So Jess appears in Stars Hollow as Luke's nephew, and he's had some trouble at home. His parents have split up. He's not doing well in school. He lives in New York. Luke is very like, that's what you do for family. You take in your family. And it's this interesting thing where like Luke is immediately, it exposes how unprepared he is for this, how like he wants to be there for people, and he is there for people, but he doesn't have the tools to do it. And so I think the Jess-Luke relationship is an interesting inversion of the Rory and Lorelai one. Of like, you know, Lorelai didn't have any of the tools to help to raise a child, but she just did it because she's can openly communicate and have an honest relationship with this person. Whereas Luke has the resources, but not the know-how.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's to sort of, I guess it's the moment that his character learns what it's like to be Lorelai.
Yes.
To actually.
Yeah.
Even though he has been there for Rory, so he kind of, but he does that in a sort of a fatherly and motherly role, like making them breakfast and all the things he does for them. But he's never actually had to sort of
like sit in the world of actually raising a person.
Yeah, and Rory's by, you know, she's a good kid, so you know,
she
has no trouble staying, you know, on the straight path. But whereas Jess is, you know, he's a wayward kid.
Yes,
and he doesn't really have any respect for authority.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's never going to be as easy.
Why so low in your rankings? I mean, not. I mean, he's not right, I mean, bang how, in the middle, right?
Yeah, he's right. He's not. I mean, is he? I don't want to ruin who's coming ahead of. But yeah, he, in terms of what you can see, he's the highest of Rory's.
Yes,
Rory's partners.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm going to throw like Paul in there at number.
Paul
is who's Paul? Yeah, just that whole gag.
So
actually, I think he's done all right. I think. I think Jess, what I was thinking, like what I said in last week about how there's like the two universes and only Lorelai and Rory can move between the two. Mm. I do feel like Jess could if he wanted to, because he kind of has the sort of, he values that high literary, that sort of, he values books, he values those things that are valued by, he could do so much more for himself.
Yeah, but, supposed to be the frustration of Jess, right? Is that we know that he's got all these skills and he can be charming if he wants to be, just whether he wants to be.
He's like, he's so against snobbery, and but he's also a huge snob.
Yes. Which is very true.
Which is the sort of the man, the paradox within the man.
Yeah, it kind of does make you think that, like, is this really a show about men? And like men struggling to be men and the crisis of masculinity.
I think it is a show about, like, I know it's, but it's like all, like, you know, feminism anyway is about men's problems, not women's. It's about what men do to women, not women are fine. You know, they're not, yeah, but they're there and men, like, it's always been a study of what men do to women.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it was only studied. It was like, it was something that became like women's problems to deal with, the way men treated them. But really, it was the study of men. Like, it's the study of what men do to women, do you think?
The thing is, Geoff, is like, the joke is here is like, oh, man explains feminism to woman, but you've just explained feminism to me and I really liked it. No, it's legit. I've never actually heard it put exactly that way before, but you're right. Feminism is a study of what men do to women.
Yeah, which is, so it's, I guess it's why it appealed to me. I sort of thought, why did I get into feminism at quite an early age and why did it sort of resonate with me? I guess the two reasons is, one, it's like, I didn't really sort of fit in with the masculine sort of, I didn't toe the masculine line. I didn't. And so there's that. And then also, like, reading things like The Female Eunuch and stuff, which the first things I sort of read was like, well, this is a book about women, but it's really a book about men and what men do to women. So it probably would be more useful if men read this, not women.
Yeah, because on a level, we know all this already.
Yeah, you know. And it's like,
intuitive level.
It's really only men's behaviour that has to change.
And it's interesting because, like, if feminism is the study of what, this is getting big. If feminism is the study of what, no jokes in this half, none. All that we transfer chat, you enjoy in the first half.
Yeah.
Done. We're on theory now. Yeah. We're in Yale. If feminism is the study of what men do to women, then I think The Gilmore Girls is a show actually about what women do to men, because women are the actors in this show. They're the ones that, like, embark on the relationships. They say when this relationship is happening, when it's not happening. Like, they, and it's how then the men then react to what the women do.
It's kind of about how, like, men derail those plans.
Yeah.
Like, how they get in the way of their themselves. Machiavellian schemes.
Yeah. Because Jess is set up as the rival for Dean.
Mm.
And then, you know, then he finally gets Rory, right? He gets the girl in that great episode of, they shoot Gilmore's, don't they? Which is the 24-hour dance-off.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realise was directed by the director of that episode, the director of High School Musical and Dirty Dancing.
Oh, yeah, because the choreography
is incredible.
It's good. Really good, yeah. I mean, it's a beautifully shot episode.
And it feels very different to any other episode that precedes it. And it also, like, the only thing that I don't like about that episode is that I think the bit at the end drags on too long when they're all really tired. I want to see more of the good dancing.
Yeah.
You know?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
But he sort of goes to that. It's him peak bad boy to the point of being like a hooligan, where he, like, basically goes to this dance to heckle and stalk Rory. Yeah.
With a book and his girlfriend.
His girlfriend Shane,
who he just, like, occasionally makes out with and then just sort of pushes it aside to read his book.
Yeah.
He does take books to some of the some weird places. Like he does, that's his thing. He's like, I know he loves books, but I really want us to know he loves books.
Yeah.
Books by men as well.
Books by men. Slim books.
He turns up, the first scene he's got, like he comes up with On the Road. It's like, come on.
Yeah, and Howl as well. He loves Howl.
He makes notes on Howl.
Yeah.
As if you'd need notes on Howl. Like, I'm not like deep into poetry. But I feel like I get Howl. Like, I don't know what notes he was making.
His takes, he's like, things just aren't that obscure.
No.
Like, he's reading Vonnegut as well. Yeah. It's like, yeah, these are all HMB books. Yeah. Like,
you know. He must love it. He must walk into Foff and be like, the books they have.
he buys all his books at Foff. He does. He is, as a character, I find him quite limited. But as in terms of what he does for the show, I think is pretty brilliant, actually, because it's the first real rift between Rory and Lorelai, right?
Yeah. That's the weird thing that Lorelai... It's the way Lorelai's okay with... It's not Dean she should... Like, she doesn't... She thinks Dean's fine and doesn't watch out for his behaviour, but whereas Jess, who's actually more similar to Lorelai, I feel like in terms of the way they both have no respect for authority, like why I don't understand why she doesn't see more of herself in Jess, because he does. I know he's like rude and surly, but it's all about him sort of not respecting. Like they could probably be friends, and they kind of have the same enemy, which is like, I suppose Jess's enemies are everyone, but it's like, but they do, you know, they have a common enemy. You know, they would have a common enemy in the upper classes, which they could bond over.
Do you think Jess cares that much about class?
I know. I think he's just against everyone, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of not very nuanced, is it?
I mean, he's certainly like when he goes the bit with Logan later on, when he's like, we used to make fun of guys like this.
Yeah.
So obviously it is something, but maybe he just makes fun of everyone.
That's it.
But then I think that's the kind of boyfriend he is. Like we were talking about like last week about the insecurities and how when men are under threat, how they deal with... how they deal with those insecurities, and his is like when he's under threat, he isolates Rory.
Yeah.
His thing is to sort of cut her off from even Lorelai, to like that mean you're against the world, kid. Sort of like,
yeah, which is like it hits that character at such a right time.
Yeah,
she's had these like two safe years with her lovely boyfriend who gets on with her friends and her mom, and every time you see them, it's like, yeah, Dean's just hanging out. Like, she's on the couch with Lane and Dean's just next to her, and like they're just all hanging out together, having a nice time. And sometimes he's paying attention, sometimes he isn't, and like, yeah.
So he's got the catalogue, and he's always
looking at his catalogue. And then like whenever it's actually quite brilliant cinematography on a cinema level kind of thing, because you always see Dean in like well lit indoor spaces mostly, where it's like it's her at home with him or in like, you know, in Dosey's with him, and it's like established set venues. And then whenever you see her for the most part with Jess, it's like outside in the dark somewhere.
Skulking
around with him.
He's such a sort of angel character from Buffy. Like, he's always skulking and sort of like...
I would think he was like, the dynamic was more Angel and Spike.
Well, I think he's Angel and Riley. Do you remember... Do you remember Riley?
Don't say that name in my house.
The Dean is such a Riley. Like
they look the same.
They look the same, and they're both aggressive for seemingly no reason, but because you know. And there's the episode of it's either Buffer or Angel where Angel comes back and says, like, your new boyfriend, I don't like him.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh God. Because also we look to people like Jess for... We kind of, those people, we look to them to say, like, what we should like.
Yeah, it's like what you said about Paris approval. Last episode, where it was like, you see what she thinks of people, and that's probably right.
We're right, yeah. Whereas Jess, I think he's like the sort of person that, even though we kind of know who, we still look to his approval, even though we know, like, he's that sort of person. I think we still want approval from him. I'm still waiting for approval from Jess.
Yeah.
Which is why when, like, he likes other people, we're like, yeah, it means so much to us when he likes someone.
And it's so important that one of the first scenes that we are invited to enjoy him as not just a sexy boy, but as a character and a person, is when him, Rory and Paris are all eating food together. And like the famous night in that goes wrong. And it's like him and Paris are really zinging off each other. And I think, to your point earlier, like, oh, this is a character who could travel between worlds. Like, if he can...
Yeah, because Paris is the only other character that I think kind of can move between. Like, she's just... she'll go straight. She'll exist in the other world. She kind of get, and she's as fast, she's as quick-witted, and she's as full of popular culture like references as.
Yes.
So she kind of can exist in Stars Hollow. She thinks it's weird
because she's also freaky enough to be a townie. Because
exactly.
Like she's a freak. Like people in Stars Hollow are freaks.
That's the thing. She's totally eccentric. Like she is like. She kind of understands the freaky town. And so when she's there, she's like, well, this is just another freaky place for me to be a freak. And
it's like, so kind of she's a freak everywhere. Yeah. So being a freak in the freaky place.
But she thinks that everywhere else is freak. She never thinks she's a freak. She just thinks everywhere else is weird. Never thinks that maybe it's her. But and so her and Jess talking like that, you're like, both of them probably could move between worlds.
Yeah, he can like, punch at her weight. And, like, nobody in the show can punch at Paris's weight apart from Rory.
Yeah.
So it is this thing of, like, oh, maybe if Jess had been brought up in the same way that Rory had, he would be the Chilton attending, Yale aspiring, you know. But he's just a little fucking jerk.
I know, that's the thing, because there's moments like that when you really pull in for him, you're like, this is the kind of guy she needs. Like,
yeah.
Just someone who's on her intellectual level, you know, and then he just lets us down so often. Like there's like a couple of episodes where he just doesn't call her, you know, and like, and then turns up on a Saturday night to find out, you know, and she's not home and she's gone to the ice hockey, and it just and he buys the Distillers tickets, and I don't know what time of night it is they're going to see the Distillers, but I feel like they might have missed the show because he's so late with that. Like he doesn't make much of an effort once he's got her.
That's the thing. That's the most interesting thing about the dynamic is that when he's like, this is a phrase that my friend Alex loves, which is he'd rather be on the outside of the tent pissing in than being on the inside of the tent being pissed on, kind of thing. Is have you heard that phrase before?
No. Sorry, who's the tent?
Okay, so it is a phrase that Alex uses that her dad always says, which is that like people who are like sort of politically revolutionary or something is not necessarily, but people who like have a lot of revolutionary thoughts and have revolutionary ideas, but once they are in established power, they sort of flail, kind of thing.
Okay.
It's the idea that like it's easy to throw stones, but not when you're in the glass house.
Okay. So it's better to be outside. Sorry.
Let's just scrap that. Okay. I'm just going to head that way. It's not worth it.
I really liked it. I just didn't understand where the tent wasn't. So he's...
The tent is the establishment.
Okay.
So he wants to be outside the establishment, throwing rocks rather than being inside the establishment, being thrown at.
Yes.
And in this case, the establishment is like, he wants to be on the outside of this perfect, like, small town teenage relationship, which is Dean and Rory, and he wants to be the aggressor of that.
Oh, yes.
But once he's actually inside... He's like, has no idea what to do or how to keep her. And it's this.
And all he's worried about is being pissed on.
Yeah, exactly. All he's worried about is being pissed on.
Shit. Yeah. I mean, I can see why he'd want to, but yeah, you're right. Because once he is in the relationship, he doesn't do a lot with it.
Yeah.
And you kind of see him, he kind of gets weirdly insecure about it. Although he does handle his insecurity a bit better than
Dean does.
There's like when he finds out they've been hanging out, he's kind of cool about it. It's like, why don't you just say, like, allow me to sort of process this, don't be weird about it. But he does end up being a dick, you know.
Why does it fall apart again?
Well, it falls apart because they go to, I mean, it's been gradually sort of falling apart because he's just sort of,
because it never really falls together. No. And that's the sort of like exciting thing about Jess and Rory, is that it does feel like it's almost like a Christopher thing where it's like it always feels like timing, where it's like, which so many of the relations on the show, it's like it's just not, they're not mature enough to handle the level of feeling they have for one another.
No. And once they are together, they are teenagers. So
yeah, like, that's realistic.
They don't really know what they're doing, you know.
Yeah,
people don't at that age, and
it's even to the point of the show handling teenage romances so well. It's like they have this big bust up at the 24-hour dance marathon, and it's a brilliant scene of Dean, Jess, and Rory having this fight, and he's like. What, you know, stop. She's like, oh, for God's sake, Dean's over there. Jess is over there. Jess won't stop looking over here or whatever. And Dean's like, just forget about it. Just stop talking about Jess for like 10 seconds. And then she calls him. She's like, hey, get the fuck out of here or whatever. It's a really weird Rory behavior. Like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not doing anything. And she says, you're looking at me. And she's like, only you only know that because you're looking at me. And he's like, no. Or so, basically, the line is, so you're looking at me all the time, but you have to force yourself to look at him.
No, I mean,
referring to Dean.
Yeah, I mean, he can deliver a zinger.
Yeah,
I mean, he does, and it's a heartbreaking scene actually. And after that,
and Dean just has had enough, and you do feel for Dean in that moment, and you root for Dean in that moment because you're like, oh, Dean's got a spine finally, you know.
I know, and then that's Dean's thing, isn't it? To kind of humiliate her in public. So it's like that's one of his things.
He loves to humiliate her in public.
Yeah, that's one of his little things, but. Yeah, and then once they're together, they kind of... I just can't sort of think of a moment when they kind of work.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets headbutted by a swan.
Yeah, he shows up to dinner
and that's
at
classic.
The grandparents' house, and Emily's being very chill about the whole thing.
Yeah, and he's got a black eye. And he's like,
shows up an hour late with a black eye
that
he got from a swan.
And he got from a swan, but doesn't say, oh, I got hit by a swan, which is a funny story. It's like, why wouldn't you embrace that story and make yourself... likeable.
Yeah, he'd rather draw out this idea that because Rory's convinced that he got into a bust up with Dean, which feels like it's in the post anyway, and he kind of wants her to jump to that conclusion so he can sort of prove that she's wrong.
Exactly. And so that he can have so he can make a thing out, make a scene, and it so he gets to be the isolated, troubled, misunderstood man, which is what he wants to be, is misunderstood by everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like for a character that's like supposedly so intelligent and is intelligent, he just sort of loves his own bad boy mystique.
Yeah.
But then he sort of he grows up and becomes an author.
See, I love it when he comes back. That's what I do think I talk about Jess, which is why Jess is so high.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jess was only ever the author that comes back, he would be probably number one.
Yeah.
Because I do really like... I mean, when he ends the first phase, it's like when he's at the party and he sort of, she tells him to get off and and that's like,
because he's trying to pressure her into sex, right?
Yeah.
Or not even sex, just like, I don't know, hand
just,
stuff.
Yeah, just dry humping. I think they're just like, I'm not sure, but pressurizing. And she's like, no, not here. This is Kyle's mum's bed or whatever it is, you know? Yeah. And then they go downstairs and they have that massive fight with Dean. And then he says something interesting after that when he's like, Dean goes and he helps like tidy up the place the next day, and he's talking to Luke. Jess is talking to Luke, and he's like, oh, that's, you know, that's, he'll make someone a great doormat one day. And I think that's such a weird thing to think of someone who just is going to sort of repair the damage they've done, that makes them that makes them a doormat in some way. Like, that's just a kind thing to do. And I think Jess has, like, he doesn't really understand kindness as a thing. Like, it's still new to him what that means. But then when he comes back, I mean,
Dreamboat.
He's great, and he's so calm. He's like he feels like a really solid, calm character.
Yeah, and it feels like to the point of like Rory's sort of like consistent failure to launch as being a product of being just overly coddled and overly adored, possibly as a child. This is like a character who like has had to experience the world.
Yeah.
More fully, and like has developed a level of grit that once the bad attitude and the sort of teen hormones get out of the way actually reveals true character.
Yeah.
You know?
And does something with it, and does something with their interests, and does something truly admirable. Writes a book.
The most admirable thing a person could do.
Have you ever written a book?
I've written six.
Six books.
So I must be six times as admirable as Jess. God,
that's incredible. Six books. He'd only written one, and to be honest,
it looks small.
It's small. Oh, it's all about length.
He only wants a book you can fit in your back jeans pocket, otherwise, too big.
Him and Logan have that great chat about the length of the book. Don't they? Where he's
do
like,
they?
Yeah, he goes like, oh, is it like Kafka? Is it like, and then he's sort of saying all the, is it Tolstoy? Is it? And then Jess goes, you seem awfully obsessed with length. And it's just such a great line. Because it just, it's exactly what Logan is obsessed with, you know?
Yeah.
It's just waving it around.
It's so true. Yeah, it's like, that is what is so sort of gross about Logan. It's like, oh, who's bigger, who's more, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how he makes people feel. And
but then you also judge Jess for the length of his book. So it's not just Logan.
I did. You know, I'm just fucking Logan, obviously. But I also love the, he's also, what helps is he's probably the most physically gorgeous person on the show. Right? Like, he's like a beautiful man. But I love the sort of, and we mentioned already that like Luke's inability, that actor, Scott Pattinson, his inability to wear any clothes that isn't a backwards baseball cap or a shirt, and he just looks fucking strange. They also play with the physicality of Jess and Dean a lot. And there's this thing about Jess, and he's sort of like kind of compact. Like, he doesn't look like a tall person at all. So he always, like, Dean always towers over him, and they use that a lot on the show really, really well. But he's like, he's almost like something like small dog syndrome about Jess. Do you know what I mean? He's just like yappy and just like, I'm here, everybody. You know what I mean? And you know, and we're big fans of small dogs over here.
Yeah,
and
it always gets quite West Side Story when they're both, when they're both like in the street together. I love those street scenes where it's all like, where Dean's always like coming up to him with, and he's trying to put the bins out and stuff, and it's all just like in his face, and
where it flips.
It just gets, it's just simple West Side Story drama.
It's just yum yum yum. So good.
Two hot men duking it out.
Duking it out. Every woman's fantasy. And there is definitely a thing of the dynamic flips, where Dean has this almost, again, this very psychopathic thing where he's like, I'm going to just let be totally normal and fine around Rory and like ask her about school and buy her a snow cone. And then he tries to just, you fucking little piece of shit, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. Hi, Rory.
It's so good that even when he's being nice, Dean's being a psycho.
Yeah.
Like, even when he's just like, I know how else I can be a psycho. I haven't tried this. I could just be really nice.
Yeah.
And even that would be psychotic.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, so good. But like, I think he comes at the right time.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, we need,
yeah, we need him there.
Yeah, and he comes back at the right time. I think when he comes back and Logan's there, and I think this is when you see Logan at his worst, when he's like finally under threat from something, when he's under threat from Jess, and he suddenly becomes so obnoxious and rude and just like, you know, it's so judgmental, like, and awful to Rory. And, you know, and then Jess goes outside and he's saying to Rory, you know, we used to make fun of guys like this. And why, this isn't you. I know you. I know you better than anyone. I don't know if he does.
Does he?
I don't know if he does. That's one of the questions I think that he certainly doesn't know Rory better than us. We know, we've envisioned her future. You know, we know.
She's the head of people at Weed Transfer.
Yeah, exactly.
She loves her team.
Yeah, exactly. We know exactly what she's going to do. So I don't know if he does, but he does sort of persuade her to go back to Yale. Like, well, maybe not, like, it takes a bit of time for it to sink, but he definitely makes her, you know, he's sort of disappointed in her enough to make her go back to Yale. And I guess that's the thing, is like, he's the sort of person, if you had them in your life, their disappointment would really hurt.
It's what you said before, it's like, even though he's a fictional character who's also 17, you're like, I do want his approval.
Yeah, I do. Like, when he approves of other characters, I follow it, you know. So, yeah, you definitely would if he was in your life.
Yeah. I like as well the, I think they pitch his relationship with Luke really well, in that it never is perfect. Like, I think even, because I watched the episode last night, the one where he comes back for Liz's wedding, which is Luke's sister, who I feel like the show kind of rewrote its own history with that, because in the early seasons, we're led to believe that Liz is like, really almost like an abusive, neglectful mother. And then we see her and she's like the sweet lady who goes to Ren Fairs.
I know. It's she's not the Liz that we envisioned in the first series. And we aren't, like, she couldn't cope with him anymore. It's like, I think she'd have been able to cope with Jess fine. It just sounds, you know, she'd probably just ignore it.
Yeah.
And she's with TJ. I mean,
oh God, I hate TJ.
He's not the number one.
No.
That's what
he's not the number one. There's something about both TJ and Jackson that they have in common that I hate. It's like this annoying rube behavior.
I know. Yeah, it totally is. Yeah. Both unbearable.
They both look like they smell.
Yeah.
Of different things, but it's earthy and it's pungent.
Yeah. And they're both in it way more than they should be.
I mean,
I'm Liz and TJ in it way more than they should be.
Towards the end, yeah. But I do think, like, if we're really honest with ourselves, like, towards the end, the wheels do start to come off the show, even before the Paladinos leave.
Yeah, no, season six, there's definitely moments where you're like,
yeah. This is completionist work I'm doing. Yeah. You know? Watching the show. I'm trying to think of what else about Jess. I know he is, like, the fan favourite. Like, I know, I can already feel the comments and the emails coming in of being like, I loved your Gilmore Girls podcast. Why didn't you spend more time on Jess? Here's all the reasons that Jess is amazing. I do think what their chemistry is greatly helped by the fact that they dated in real life.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
You so can, that's like, when it, that, so they really kiss.
They
none
really
of that lame
be kissing.
Stuff under the tree. They really yeah. kiss.
These moments where, like, here's what I love about Rory is that she's such a good kid, but she's also like, her one of her fundamental flaws, apart from the fact that she's kind of coddled and she has sort of emotional attachment issues from her parenting, as we discussed last week, but she's also dick crazy. Like when she when she catches a pheromone, she is fucking like, fuck. Like, she does, like, her fucking fanny's going wild. Like, she is like, I can't think of anything else. And I love that about her.
And what about your boyfriend? No. I've seen that one over there. I want that one. Yeah.
That's it.
She is, like, at the dance. Like, she doesn't even notice that Dean's dancing with her. She's so hungry for it.
Yeah. She is hungry for dick.
She doesn't even notice that his girlfriend sat next to him asleep. But, you know, she's still just like.
And I almost think this is like, this is gross. But also, unfortunately, canon in my head. I feel like she's a character. It's like, we know that, like, she's like not outdoorsy or sportsy or anything like that, which neither was I, but like, neither are lots of people. But I feel like there is this disconnection between her mind and her body, because she's like there for her brain. Like, she's like, she's known as brainy kid, and she's rational and she's practical. I feel like she has no sensual real life. Even like, I bet like she was like the last kid in her class who started masturbating. Do you know what I mean? Like, she was like a late wanker. And like, she's got like no like relationship with her own body, I feel. And then when she finally like catches the scent for the first time, she's like, oh my god, it's overwhelming. I can feel my own skin for the first time ever. I know I'm being gross, but you get what I mean.
I have absolutely no notes on this at all. Not.
You are so uncomfortable.
I should not have nothing about this. So, maybe it's a fourth watch thing. I don't know.
Like,
you are right.
No,
you are right. She is.
Yeah.
Yeah. She really gets on it when she.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
She
yeah.
Gets
yeah.
A taste.
I feel like she's like. I'm not gonna. Do you know what? Anything I say more on this subject is gonna just make you fucking uncomfortable.
No. No more.
No. No more, please, Susan Faludi.
No, do some more wanking stuff.
But like, she had never wanked in her life, and then she met Jess for the first time, and that night she wanked for the first time, and then she, that was like, well, something's different now. Something is different.
And she crashes a car, and that's what happens if you masturbate. Dead, lose your virginity. God knows what happens to you.
But it's like, you can so see the absolute physical attraction written all over those actors' faces that you're like, everything that she does that's crazy and so out of character for the character we've built makes total sense. It's like her letting him drive the car that Dean made for her is cheating before the cheating even happens.
I know, it's almost worse.
Yeah.
By the time it comes, it's like, what were you thinking would happen?
Why is he driving?
I know.
Yeah.
I know he wanted cones. Which I do.
Cones.
Which is
ice
a great...
Ice cream cones.
It's a sweet moment. I mean, the cone... I feel like...
Yeah.
That immediately, like, Dean's out. Once he said cones in a funny voice...
Yeah.
Dean's, like... Dean could never do that. He couldn't do a funny voice like
silly.
That.
He's not silly. He's not funny. Yeah, like, it's definitely, that is our character playing with rebellion, letting the boy her boyfriend hates and her mother hates drive the car, her boyfriend, the beautiful 50s car her boyfriend built her.
I know.
And
I mean,
though,
she must have known in that situation that even if nothing went wrong, things at work and things had already gone, like, even the situation was not a good one to be in.
And then it, like, leads to this eventual, in that brilliant season finale that we already talked a little bit about, of her kissing him for the first time.
Her kissing him. It's not. I think that's what's so sweet. Like, she does, it's...
Yeah.
He kind of just stands there.
Yeah. And it's such a good, a well-staged kiss. Because it really feels like someone has, like, they've taken as much of this as they can. They're like, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I just need to... I need, like, the period at the end of the sentence. Do you know what I mean? I need it to stop.
Yeah.
Like, and he's just so amazed by it. And she's like, don't tell anyone. And then she just runs away.
And then she goes all the way. She goes to Washington. For,
yeah.
And then she comes back and he's with Shane.
He's with Shane. Which seems fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what he'd do. It's how he'd deal with that.
Yeah. I do feel very bad for that character still.
Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah. She must be so confused by why people being so rude to me in the yeah. chemist.
I wish there was kind of more of a reconciliation of like, there's just like the blonde women support group in Stars it's Hollow, just like, which is Lindsay just, and Shane, yeah, like, oh, this woman's ruining our life.
Maybe like a separate, like a different show. That's yeah. Just like, yeah, blondes in Stars Hollow. Just when they're at the Bracebridge dinner, when they go in the, when they're in the sleigh, my favourite Jess moment is when they drive past the snowman and he's like, he's talking about, he's like, oh, there's your one. It looks like
Bjork.
And he's like, oh, she's like, oh, something about Dean. He's like, what do you even talk about? If you know, like he doesn't know Bjork. He's like, what do you even talk about? If you don't talk about Bjork. I love just that sort of like him just saying, what do you even talk about?
Which is both a reflection of what you care about at that age. Like I remember when I was that age reading High Fidelity for the first time and you know, that thing that's supposed to be set up as a false thing of like, oh, it's not what you like. It's not what you're like. It's what you like kind of thing. Mm. And that Rob and that character in that book. And I remember taking that at total face value and being like, you're right. And then you realize as you get older, that stuff matters less and less. But first of all, Jess and Rory are ages where those things do matter a lot because you haven't formed any real identity yet except for the things that you enjoy and don't like. But also it's this thing of, it does call attention to the fact that like, Rory and Dean's conversations are kind of about nothing.
Yeah, like, that's it. Yeah, that's when you're like, oh my God, what do they talk about? Like,
yeah.
And it's also sort of, you know, finally Rory can talk to someone about Bjork and that's going to be like, because you couldn't, like, and then Tristan's already done the PJ Harvey line by then, I think. So
yeah.
You kind of, it's just like, oh, finally, someone who's like on Lane's level, like, and Lane can talk to. It's like he immediately does fit in with those.
Yeah,
with her
the sort of like tastemaker people of the show. Yeah,
and so, yeah. I don't know what she talked to Dean about. I still don't.
But like, yeah, whenever you zone in on their conversations, and even when they're happy and Jess hasn't even shown up yet, like occasionally you'll get the old like, oh, Hunter Thompson or whatever.
Yeah.
But you then it's like often just like very like workaday stuff, shifted doses. Taylor's gone crazy again on such and such. Taylor, I know, but blah, blah. It's like, it's like talking about stuff that's happening in the town, talking about when they're going to hang out next, like watching, like, I like the media that they kind of compromise on. Like, they both love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I know, yeah. He loves BattleBots as well.
BattleBots! Oh, God.
Of course, if you get him started on like 1950s Housewives and like he can't stop
loves
him absolutely
that.
Loves that one
because I did read that Amy Sherman-Palladino so she already had this experience with Chad Michael Murray where he got Dawson's Creek and he did a longer arc and he was written out of the show and apparently she was like after that like, now if I see someone and they have chemistry I'm just going to say like, look, we need to have these people on a series contract because we keep losing people if you don't nail them down.
Yeah.
And so she apparently, she met Milo, what's his last name again? Milo Vermicelli?
Ventimiglia.
And she was like, oh, this kid is adorable. I don't have a part for him, but I'm going to write one just because he's amazing. But I'm going to get him on a series contract now. So...
And then nearly had a spin-off as well.
And he nearly had a spin-off.
Which I'm really
glad he didn't.
Which really, because it ends up, I think the spin-off ends up in the show, like those bits where it goes.
Yes, Here Comes the Sun.
Yeah.
Absolutely rubbish.
It was Windward Circle. That's what the series was called. Windward Circle.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Windward Circle. It doesn't sound right. I've written it down, it doesn't sound right.
No, that can't be right.
Windward.
It's like very the Rural Juror, isn't it? Windward Circle. All right.
And it didn't, but it was interesting because I thought, what other characters could you do a spin-off of? Like, none of the male characters could have a spin-off. And Jess really didn't have one, it turns out, either. But,
yeah.
Like, they're not substantial enough.
Not.
Whereas, actually, all the women, like, I would watch an Emily one.
Totally.
Lane. Obviously, Lorelei Lane. Yeah. I mean, have you spoken to Netflix about your reboot?
No, but that's coming later.
And then, yeah, they all could. Even Suki, you know, there's so many, all of them, but no male character has.
No.
Because none of them are actually, like, in it enough to, or they're not substantial enough to have storylines that you'd care about.
Totally. Yeah, no, I that would have never worked, even though he has like probably the most raw star power of any of the of any of those people.
But even he doesn't really have enough substantial character. Like, he's kind of, he has dimensions, but there's
he's on that show, This Is Us, I believe.
Oh.
He's married to Mandy Moore.
Oh, in the, it, not in real life?
No, in the show.
Okay.
So, you know, he's okay. So next on your list, coming in at number three, it's Max Medina.
Oh, Max, when we first spoke about this and you said, you just sent me a message saying justice for Max Medina. And so ever since then, I've kind of been wary that he means a lot to you.
Do you know what? It's funny. When my memory of the show, because as I said, I haven't really watched it since my early 20s. And my memory of it was like, Max Medina is like adorable. I do think he's like a perfect guy. Like, he's like really has very few character flaws.
Yeah.
And even when he picks fights with Lorelai over things, they're all very justified. I find the actor incredibly attractive. Like the Stop, why do you hate my sexual desires? Every time I say that someone's attractive, you're like,
are you going home to masturbate?
I'm going home to masturbate for the first time.
Max Minty.
So I can't wait to see how it goes.
Careful, it will open up all sorts of problems for you if I know how it goes.
So watching my returns, I was like, yeah, he's the. Why was he treated so casually by the show? He was great.
Yeah.
Romantic lead.
Yeah.
But then watching it this time around, I think he is the perfect distillation of the first pancake theory, you know?
Like, yeah.
You got to throw that first one away. Yeah, yeah.
He is first pancake. Yeah. When he comes back, he's the same pancake. And yeah, he just sets up the dynamic for us all to realise where it's going to go, that this is for her to struggle with anyone from that world as a love interest, or just there to be a tension between that, you know, what he represents, because they're both kind of really well matched, because they're really hopeless romantics.
Yeah.
Like they're all about grand gestures and
patter.
And actually, I love the scene where they're in the coffee shop together and they're just like switching between, someone sits between them. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. You're right, they're both such romantics,
And so, but because of that, they've romanticised their own relationship. Like, and then so when it gets to them going through the sort of the daily, but then Lorelai always does that. She never sort of thinks about how it work on a day, or she does think about it and immediately runs away from the idea. Yeah. Like that sort of like, that the daily routine, that she'll have to some way change what she does and change the way she brings Rory up.
Yeah.
To take into account someone else's opinion.
Yeah. And like, I think it's very fair when, even though it is kind of cringe, where he's like, what's my role here? Like, he's about to marry her. They've clearly talked about nothing.
Yeah. In terms what's of my role here?
Yeah.
But then that's him sort of speaking again to the sort of the grander narrative of like, of like men.
He's what
like,
role do men have in the show?
What role do men have in society? That's where he's sort of, it's like, what is my role here? I don't, you know, you seem to have done everything by yourself. What is, you know, it's like a whole sort of end of men scenario, which comes before, you know, so he's kind of, what is his role? And I guess that's the problem. Like, his role is to be eye candy.
Yeah. His role is to be the first pancake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it's like, it's interesting because he's in a limited amount of episodes and I think he's a great performer and I like seeing him. And I like that there are things that, as you both said, him and Lorelai are both very romantic people, and there's things he says to her in the context of their relationship that like wouldn't work on everyone but really works on her. Like, there's a bit where he's on the phone to her and he's like, you know, I teach literature and those it's this mad monologue or like, you know, it's all about take the risks of the human heart and what kind of teacher would I be if I didn't take a risk right now. And she's like, wow.
That got me. That's
And I was like, that's kind of bonkers. Like,
but then that's kind of what she's also like, she's influenced by not like high literature, like, but she's kind of, her romantic like ideas from TV and film and this idea of what romance should be. And so that's why they're both quite, because their ideas are the same, you know, about what romance is. It's like, it's grand. And it's like, she wants big gestures and just things that, but she doesn't really want, she does want that, I know, but she also doesn't.
Doesn't want her day-to-day to be fucked with in any way, really. She wants to sort of live a fantasy. But it's interesting in the sense that, like, it gives you, when her, the newness of that relationship in season one to her gives you this sense of what her romantic life was up until that point, which I find a very interesting, unspoken thing.
Because she's never brought a guy home before.
Yeah.
He's the first one that happens to have been brought home.
She's never spent a night away from Rory.
Yeah. And then, and that's he's the first. So it's, you're like, oh, okay. So for 16 years, you've just, I don't know where she's been.
I think, okay, here's what I think.
Where's she
obviously
been going?
I think, where's she been going? I think it's been very like, you know, she'll be at the inn or whatever and there'll be some
handyman.
Yeah.
Tom the handyman.
It'll be like, because she kind of says, like, she talks about like, oh, past boyfriends, like, oh, you know, the earrings and tattoos and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've always gotten the sense that, like, people who are, like, passing through.
Yeah, if you're going to throw your life away, you better have a motorcycle. She says that early on.
Yeah.
That's why. Because they're always just bikers. Yeah. Passing through. But, for breakfast. Or the breakfast, right, you know. Yeah. So that's what you think. Yeah. I mean, it's weird that she's
and
never...
And it'll be like Rory's at school, so she's like, all right, want to come around? Padding shed? Fucking, let's do it, you know?
And off to the school run. Yeah, I guess that's it. That's what she... So I guess Max is the first... He's quite a serious one, then, if, like, he gets to go back to the house. And that's a sweet episode where his car breaks down and it snows.
Oh, that's really nice.
It's such a sweet episode, but it really sets up the Luke versus Max, like... thing for us, because he's out there giving the hot chocolates to the tailor and he's doing that and
that episode made me cry and actually because his dad was a reenactor.
I know yeah,
makes me upset.
and Max and like Lorelai walk, he sees him in the distance and he's and then as the audience, like, I feel like that's the first time we're like, oh no, Max isn't right for it, because we all feel for Luke and that's when it's an interesting thing to do, to set them up against each other.
Yeah.
And it's why, and I had sort of like, why do I want Luke? Why do I want Luke? I had to ask myself why I wanted Luke, not Max, when Max is actually really suitable for
it. Yeah, he's a better match on most like technical levels.
Yeah. So I had to look at myself, that, you know, what is it?
So what is it?
I don't know. I guess I just like simple men.
Simple men.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I think as well, Max creates the opportunity for Luke, because you get the sense of, like, everywhere up till this, like, they have, like, Lorelai comes into the diner once or twice a day. They have the little flirt, but, like, he's never been in her house prior to season one. Like, there's a thing like, oh, he's like, oh, this is your house or whatever.
Yeah.
But they have this, like, quite workaday sort of friendship. And then when she starts dating Max, I think a flare goes up for him, being like, oh, she's dating people now.
Yeah.
She's like decided that
on
she's
the
ready.
Market.
Yeah, she's on the
market.
I think he probably in his head being like, oh, no, because I think he really respects her priorities with her family. She's like, oh, she's not doing that. She's raising her kid. Like, I'm not going to get in there. No. And sure, she's attractive. And then he sees that and he's like, oh, there was an opportunity and I missed it. Like,
You're right.
And that's what kicks it all into high drive.
Yeah, so until then, so it's not like he's been pining this whole time.
No.
That's when he doesn't realise he's been pining until season four.
Yeah. Because he's a fucking thick guy. Thick. Another thick fucking man reading a catalogue.
He's just not that in touch with his feelings, maybe. But he is like, I just wonder what happens when he looks over and you can tell that he's upset by seeing.
Yeah.
Why does it take like another four seasons? Anyway, that's
it. Is sort of stupid.
It's like,
it gets to a point where it's kind of dumb how much they drag out the lead up, because they also they're smart enough to know that once they fire that gun,
I know,
they'll just be dealing with that for the rest of the show, you know. So I admire them leaving it so late, but also the things they put in the way of it are just boring.
Yeah.
It's like, you never, when he gets married briefly, doesn't he?
Nicole.
Like, oh, no cares. Yeah. And Rachel, and it's like, we know these people aren't going to work out. Like,
Rachel just walking around the village, like, just walking around, taking
pictures
photos
of nothing.
Yeah, just taking pictures of what you, I'm going to get some more shots. What are you taking photos of?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I like her, but, you know.
And we all like Rachel. Yeah. You know? Yeah, so I really appreciate Max Medina on that level. And like, I find him and Rory's relationship quite adorable and quite heartbreaking.
Well, that's the thing. He's quite a nice father.
He's a great father figure.
He's a great father. Like, and he sort of says, you know, it's not about, like, he's just really concerned for her. Like, it's not about him being a teacher. Like, he wants to talk to her, like, you know, as Rory, not as a student. So I think when she goes to him and speaks to him, and then they have that thing where she does a piece for him for the Chilton paper.
He wanted to be a clown.
Which makes so much sense.
It makes so much sense that he wanted to be a clown.
Yeah, and you know what? Lorelai wanted a clown. She needs a clown.
Yeah.
She needs to be entertained and she needs an audience.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
He wanted to be a clown. I mean, that when you realise he wanted to be a clown, you're like, no, they would have been good together. They definitely would have worked. Number two,
it's Luke Danes.
Yeah, a shock. Your listener's just like,
if Luke's number two,
who could possibly?
Who could be number one?
This crazy podcast.
I want to know if anyone guessed it. I mean, I did put it on Instagram, but. You know, people don't remember that. So it's, you know what, I got issues with Luke, but ultimately so do they.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's what I like as a character, like you were saying, like, he was meant to be a she.
Yeah,
and I love that. And and even when he came in, like, he wasn't meant to be a key character.
No,
and there's that thing I think Lauren says, it's like, if you're interested, the camera finds you. And so he ends up being this huge role. I don't understand what the show was about until it was about that.
Right? Yeah, it's like there was kind of 11th hour thing where they realized that, like, there was no men in the show, like, no grown men.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Oh, fuck."
What about a mechanic? No, we've got a woman as a mechanic. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess
diner owner.
Diner.
Done.
Like, but it gives him quite a nice twist to, like, cuz it's his father's hardware store, and he always loved being in the store, but he didn't want to do that sort of traditionally manly job, so he becomes like, he makes breakfast. I mean, he becomes Donna Reed, like, for them.
He does. He is their Donna Reed.
And so he makes their breakfast. So it's quite a nice little switch to, like, he is very traditionally masculine. He does fix things, but he also has this sort of motherly side to him.
And he has his very particular views on nutrition.
Yeah, and I know. And he should care. He should worry. Yeah.
You know, people often talk about how, you know, these women who constantly eat junk food for every meal and often have, like, several dinners at once, that, and, like, why are they so thin? And that's not my question. My question is, do they stink? These are people who are having 5 or 6 cup of coffees today, so you know they shitting. And, like, coffee breath all the time, and they're shitting all the time, I would say. And also just, like, eating this horrible, stodgy food. They stink!
Oh, God, it seems like such a special place to go to. It's always been, now I'm going to watch it being like, whoa, what's the house smell like?
You never see a bathroom on Gilmore Girls. It's very Brady Bunch that way.
Yeah. There is. No.
You never see their bathroom, I don't think.
Do we ever see a bathroom? we see some
bathroom mirrors where
bathrooms.
People have like conflict. Yeah.
Yeah.
But never a toilet.
You never see them use it. It's so weird. Why they never film?
Oh, they're fucking destroyed by Rory and Rory's monster shits.
That's why.
Those women stink. That's why Luke is so like type
just
A about
your,
it.
Change your diet, for God's sake. No, you can't use the bathroom.
The new pitch for the show. What if the most beautiful girls in the world were mother and daughter and best friends and they stank?
But no one, people have problems with it. How does a town get over that? The town meetings about that. But they're not invited to. They come in late too, like wondering why everyone's looking at them.
We gotta talk about Rory's IBS. Rory would definitely have IBS.
Oh, God, really would.
Rory's over at WeTransfer. Yeah. Have an IBS.
Oh.
So that's part of it. Anyway.
So part in the way that he cares, mm-hmm. that's how he shows. I mean, he is a father.
Yeah.
More, I feel like that's, he kind of works more as a father to Rory than he does as a boyfriend for Lorelai.
Yes, totally.
And but it's that thing about the sort of, the, how they want to set up this idea that the family isn't always as simple as, like, what is the family? Like, so they rubbish Christopher, the biological father, rubbish him quite a lot.
Yeah, and her biological parents are obviously lacking.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, what is...
So they actually, what is... And he is a great father to Rory. He's always there.
Yeah.
Helps with the mattress. And, you know, does the whole... Organises, like, so many things. He's always there, basically.
Well, that's what Emily says, right? She's the first person to call it, where she's like, well, he's always there.
Yeah,
like,
when he's the Iceman.
He's the Iceman, like he's doing this, he's doing that, why is he always there? And she has this thing where it's a great early scene with them of like, Emily wants to have the sort of like Gabby, you know, like gossipy chat with her and Lorelai. And Emily will routinely be very sad that like her and Lorelai don't have a relationship the way that Lorelai and Rory have a relationship.
Yeah.
And she tries to fix it in a way that Lorelai's kind of not interested in fixing it. And she's like, oh, let's talk, you know, you like this man. And... then Lorelai finally concedes. She's like, yeah, I don't know, maybe. And then Emily just goes, now we can talk about what the hell you're thinking. You stinky, stinky girl.
Also, you absolutely stink. Is this where you... This is that. No, you can't use my bathroom.
Do you... The thing is about Luke is that I'm never really going to commit to him in my head because I just don't like grumpy people. Like, Jess at least is, like, just doing the teen angst thing. He's going to work through it. But Luke's going to stay grumpy forever.
No, I do wish... when he is happy, I find it a little unsettling.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I would... Like, he'd do some good jokes, but I don't know why... I don't know how him and Lorelai would work.
Yeah. And when they came back for A Year in the Life, it was kind of understood that they've been together for a long time, right?
Yeah.
They're not married, but they're partners.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. Oh, he's at... Why are we being negative? He's at number two. So.
He's
great.
I think he's really... I'm only negative in like whether he should be with Lorelai.
Yeah.
Like I think you see when they... I think he has wanted... I don't even know if he's wanted Lorelai. Or maybe he has, but he's wanted someone to complete his... He's got the house. He's already picked out the house.
Yeah.
He knows what he wants and he just wants someone to complete it. And he's got it in his head that it's going to be Lorelai. But when they go on that first date and he brings out like the horoscope.
The horoscope is very sweet.
It's really sweet.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful moment. And you're like, oh God, that is amazing. But then you realise...
So to remind everyone, I'm conscious that we're like skipping over a lot of moments that we've just recently seen but like people won't have. But the moment is that like she says, oh, when did we first meet? And he said 8 years ago. Mm. You were following me around trying to get me to give you coffee and then you asked me my birthday and she takes out the newspaper and writes down on his horoscope, you will meet a very annoying woman today.
Yeah. And he keeps it in his wallet.
He keeps his wallet for 8 years.
And then...
I mean, I do melt at that.
It's a really beautiful moment. But you don't... What's weird is Lorelai doesn't have that same investment in him.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't go the other way.
It's grown for her, but he's kind of...
He's always had that.
Yeah.
Will they ever match up in that way? Like, I know it takes... that's the weird thing. He's been keeping that in his wallet for 8 years, and it still takes him 7 years to realise he has to listen to an audio.
He learned that from... It's such a weird anticlimactic them finally getting together. It's like, he listens to an audio book about love and connection or whatever. It's like a joke, almost.
Yeah.
But, like, that's him. Like, he has a genuine epiphany.
But he's expressed... It's just like... Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, well, four seasons and him finding out, him realizing. Wow. It's such an underplayed moment.
I kind of love it because it's something that we talk a lot of, we've talked about in the past on this show, which is that you can hear things and hear wisdom things and advice from people your whole life, and then sometimes you're just ready to hear something and it'll be the most trite fucking thing you've ever heard in your life, and you'll be like, wow. And that's almost, that is how, it's very wise. It's how it's played in the thing. It's like, it's supposed to be trite and stupid, but he's just ready.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it is, and then they go together, and then there's the bit where they go together. And then the clash and Wedding Bell Blues, obviously. And,
yeah.
Because Christopher is always a problem for Luke. Yeah. Because...
Because neither of them are going anywhere. It's the ultimate, like, the unstoppable force meets the immovable object.
Yeah.
Christopher being the force and Luke being the object. It's like, neither one of us is ever going anywhere, so you're going to have to bunch up, and neither of them ever will.
And he's also spent most of his, a lot of his life is looking after Rory, kind of being a father to her, then a father to Jess. I think he's probably, like, a little bit annoyed about absent fathers. Like, he's probably something where he's like, I wouldn't mind one. You know, Jess's dad's off in, whatever it's called, Wynwood Swallow, wherever he lives. Wherever he lives. And so he's probably, like, a bit annoyed about...
Christopher, like, is the fact of Christopher.
Yeah, because he's just like, I've been bringing up your daughter for you. I don't mind. But also, fuck off.
But also fuck off,
And it's, you know, and so that's why when the April storyline comes in, I think that for me is really tears me apart, because it's like, he has sort of been... covering up for absent, and he must be thinking, like, absent fathers, they're the worst. They're never, you know, they're not here, they don't do, I'm left to go. And then he finds out he's been an absent father unknowingly all this time. And he's just like, how must that have hit him to be like, shit, I'm the absent father?
You're so right. The whole journey has been like, I am raising other people's kids for them. And like, because like, people just don't have the fucking stones to, you know, man up and do the thing.
Yeah.
And he's just been like, got a 12-year-old. Yeah, the April stuff is a rough toke, isn't it? Like, tough chew.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's, that's that, and that's on no one's watch but ASP's. You know, that's So you know that cut in season 7. That.
The rules of the Gilmore Girl universe is that women are the most important thing in the world, and the only thing that can trump a woman's desire is the creation of a new and younger woman. It's like Gigi ruins Christopher and Lorelai, and then April ruins Lorelai and Luke.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting thing, because that's all put into place by Luke.
Yeah.
It's like he just sort of decides that, like, look, I'm trying. Like, that's, I mean, I haven't watched those episodes in the rewatch yet, but like, him and Lorelai are on track to get married. They've had their issues with Christopher, you know, and all that kind of stuff. They're all good. She wants to marry him. And then he says, like, look, can we just postpone while I'm still getting to grips with being a father?
Yeah. It's kind of too much. It takes him ages to tell her that April exists, which is just...
Do you believe that character still?
April?
No, do you, so oh, do that you in believe Luke. That Luke would...
No, I think he'd say straight away. I think he's too... Yeah. He's too simple in a sweet way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think he's simple in a sweet way. I don't think he has the complexity to, like, hide that from her. I think he would have told her straight away.
Yeah. Yeah, it just it that is like one of the show's both a bug and a feature, where these are 45 to 50 minute long episodes. They're long seasons, like 20 episodes a season, and as a result there's a lot of just fluff. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of obstacles that aren't obstacles.
Well, that's the,
like,
yeah,
you
and
know,
they definitely do this with Luke and Laura, like they're, once they're together, they kind of have to make up these rather spurious obstacles for them. And that's what they kind of just like... It's like once they get together, they don't really know what to do with them. Because that whole thing
But that's
is,
TV, isn't it? Like, yeah. That's what tension and drama
it's not
is,
life.
Right? It's not
it's
life.
It's not life, though. Yeah. I've got no guidance for what happens when I do get together, you know.
Right? It's why the even though we haven't even talked about this so far, the fact that like Gilmore Girls was harboring one of the highest paid movie stars of today, like Melissa McCarthy is just sitting there, the greatest comedic actress of her generation, and I don't care about any of her storylines really, because her and Jackson aren't going to break up. They're just like, you guys are fine over here, being cookie and fine over here. Like, whenever there's like a storyline that's too long with them, I'm just like, go away, stop it. I don't care. Like, you know? And that's Melissa McCarthy, the most watchable woman of her generation.
I'd almost not want, like, I like it best when she doesn't really have storylines. Like in the first sort of couple of seasons where she's just being great. And then as soon as she gets, once Jackson went back, they're like, oh, she needs a storyline. It's like, I'd rather she didn't have one if that's going to be the storyline.
Yeah.
It's never, what, is it about cucumbers? I don't know. You know.
Is this about cucumbers? Yes, the answer is yes, it's about cucumbers.
It's about cucumbers and it's a whole episode worth.
It's so funny, actually, when you say that, because, you know, one of the great critiques of the sort of rom-com era is the, and the stereotypes of the, oh, the kind of the kooky best friend who has no internal life kind of thing. And Suki is absolutely the quintessential cookie best friend with no internal life. But when they give her one, it's kind of a bummer. You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, she didn't want one. I didn't say I wanted one. I just said she didn't have one.
Those are different things.
Different things.
But here's the thing. On this watch around, on the first season, I think I glanced off of a deleted Suki storyline that didn't... like a shred of it was left that they clearly got rid of, because you are stunned. You are looking at me like I'm one of the stinky girls of Stars Hollow. So, you know that there's an episode early on where Lorelai makes quite a kind of a cruel aside to Suki, where Suki's trying to give her love advice either about Max or Luke or something, and Lorelai says quite defensively, what would you know? You haven't had a relationship in years, right? Remember that?
Yes.
We all remember that episode because it's like one of the very few times that Lorelai is like a bitch.
Yeah.
And it's very shocking both for Suki and for her and for the audience. And then later on when they're talking, she's like, I'm so sorry. That was so awful. And she was like, you know, I've been busy. I'm at the inn or I'm at the hospital. Mm. And I was like, the hospital? Why is she at the hospital?
Why is she at the hospital? That's all she says.
Yeah, and then Lorelai's like, I know, you know. And I think the tone of it is, I think originally there was some kind of storyline where Suki has like an ailing parent or something that they maybe took out because they're like, no, we just want to be kooky. You know? Because that would explain a lot why, because you have to wonder, why is like a Michelin star chef in this fucking back alley inn?
Yeah.
I think it's because she grew up there and because she has a parent who's sick.
I don't think anyone's ever noticed that line before.
I know, I think I'm the first!
The internet is going to go absolutely crazy.
I hope the Gilmore Girls Reddit gets a load of this one.
God. Yeah, that would make more sense though. That she had something else in there and they just sort of...
Right?
No, let's just keep her in the kitchen.
Exactly. I would prefer, if they're going to give her any storyline, I wish it was like, she's a comedic character, but who's got some like real stuff going on, you know, like real things that real people deal with. And so her kookiness and her zaniness is like kind of this gumption that she has in spite of her circumstances. And I would love that. But what you get is just her and Jackson arguing about fucking zucchini flowers. I'm just like, I don't care.
Him in his fucking wrestling pajamas.
Yeah. That made no
sense.
When
I first, you see them before they explain them, like, and I was like, what are they? What is he wearing?
Yeah.
And then he comes out the cover and he explains to me, like,
That's not enough.
That's still not an explanation for what these are.
This is about Luke.
Yeah, but this is...
I think ultimately we've talked a lot about Luke in the lead up to talking about Luke, you know what I mean? So I'm not sure what we have left to say.
Yeah, I mean, he's not very romantic. That's his thing, like.
But that's the thing, is that it's like she get from all the other people, she has all these big displays of affection, but what she gets from Luke is just consistent love.
This is I guess this is going back to what Dean said when he was suddenly wise. Like, is that enough?
Yeah,
is that enough?
And
Lorelai.
That's the central question. Because he was right; he diagnosed Luke and Lorelai perfectly.
Yeah,
because even if Lorelai thinks it's enough. No one around Lorelai does.
No.
Like, her parents don't.
Everyone in Stars Hollow would think it's enough.
Yeah.
And I guess...
I don't know, Stars Hollow were already planning contingencies for them breaking up.
Yeah, that's true, the ribbons. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think like Lorelai's big fear is like leaving Stars Hollow, which is why she likes Dean so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Rory's with Dean,
yeah,
she'll stay in Stars Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Dean, that's the thing. I guess that's the basic, the problem at the heart of Lorelai is she wants more, but she doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, and that's why Luke isn't enough, but is.
Yeah.
No answers here.
No answers. Complex psychology.
Yeah. That the show's full of characters like that who yeah. you love and also infuriate you, and there's no answers. There's no, like that whole, you know, the whole team, Logan team, it's like, there's no answers.
There are no teams.
There's no teams.
That it is to misunderstand yeah. the text is to this have is, teams.
Yeah. If, yeah I know. But there are no, there are no, you know.
Yeah, just and, a lot and, of flawed men.
Yeah, just a lot. That's it. They should, if there's any teams, they should be, the women, yeah, the women are the teams.
Yeah, the women are the teams.
The teams here, yeah, because yeah. they're the only ones you'd have a team around. Like the people that build, the people that they build their teams around.
Yeah,
the audience builds, and I do the same. You know,
yeah,
it's preposterous. Apart from one man, of course.
Are we ready to talk about him? Our number one.
Yeah, imagine the shock.
So our number one, you say it.
Dave Rogalski.
Brava.
What a man.
What a man.
A boy, really, I suppose.
He's all man to he's me. All... So Dave Rogalski
is, he's played by Adam Brody, who then leaves Stars Hollow to go to become Seth Cohen in the OC. So he's in 9 episodes mm-hmm. of Gilmore Girls.
Where he is Lane's many. Love interest.
Yeah, and he's in Hepalien, the band.
Yes, he is.
And he comes in and he's just, I just have no faults. He has no faults. I have no problems with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he's not in a boring way, not in the Max Medina way. No. Just in like a, what a gorgeous boy.
Yeah, he's just, he's everything he does. And he's kind of everything that all the other characters, especially the Dean and Jess, everything they get wrong, he gets right.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy situation to go into with Mrs. Kim and Lane, but he's patient and thoughtful and supportive.
Yeah.
And, you know...
And, like, he's also this rare thing that only that actor can play. And I've already forgotten his name, even though I know he is the heartthrob of a generation because I never watched that TV show he was on. But he's a slick nerd.
I know. Well, he invents... I mean, he invented
a slick nerd,
he invents a slick nerd. I don't think, like... no one was wearing penguin shirts until he came along. Like, no one was dressing like that. No one, like... He invents...
Yeah.
That we take sort of nerds and geeks for granted now.
Yeah.
As being, like, things like there's always a geek, like a cool geek.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really exist
yeah.
until Seth Cohen. And the precursor to that is...
Dave Rogalski,
yeah.
What's kind of extra sweet is that, like, it's Lane Kim is based on one of the co-producers and longtime best friend of Amy Sherman-Palladino, Helen Pye, whose name is an allegram for Hepalien. And Helen Pye did grow up in the way Lane Kim grew up. She grew up Seventh-day Adventist with a Korean family, and they were also sort of health obsessed. So a lot of things that happened to Lane have literally happened to Helen Pye. And she married a man called Dave Rogalski.
I know. It's... Which I assume that's a very happy marriage.
Yeah.
Because it's lovely that that's the story behind it.
Yeah,
because often when you watch Lane's storyline, that's like you're like that can't be. It looks quite over the top. It's like, well, no, it's kind of based on a real thing actually, so it's fact.
Yeah, it's the thing, and it's such a. I mean, this gives us a sort of a. We'll talk more specifically about Dave Rogalski in a second, but like Lane's storyline, I think is longtime fans all agree it's the hardest thing to take.
It's the bitterest pill. Yeah, like it is really. I think that whenever you sort of think about Lane, when you talk about Lane, I think
it's really depressing.
Everyone kind of drops their head and they feel it in their hearts. It feels, it hurts because they destroy her narrative arc. Like they just, Zach. Ugh. I mean, Zach comes, obviously, he's in the band and then obviously he's there after Dave leaves. And I just don't understand why they would do that to it still now. This is me just not comprehending it.
Yeah, I don't comprehend it either. And because it's not even just that she ends up with this like sort of dopey guitarist guy who she doesn't seem that happy with or anything. It's that her whole childhood, like all the Stars Hollow years where Rory's like having all these adventures or whatever, and Lane's always grounded. Like, her childhood is, like, abusive. Like, it's really hard to take in a show that feels, like, quite grounded and, like, there's lots of victories and miracles. Like, Lane, there's so few victories and miracles for Lane. Like, she... Like, her rebellions, they're too late and not enough. Like, she's so afraid of her mum. Like, it's a real terror. And, like, I know it's like a Suki thing, right? It's supposed to be, like, a goofy thing. But because the show treads this line between comedy and drama, you do just feel depressed for that character. I frequently feel depressed for her.
I feel... And then she sort of gets freedom.
Yeah.
And she has it for, what, a year?
Yeah.
Before she loses her virginity, is rightly punished for it.
Yeah.
And ends up with
rightly punished.
And is by the show. But obviously the show loves to punish. But God, if you didn't listen to the first episode, I just said women should be rightly punished for losing their
rightly
virginity.
Punished.
The show likes to punish women for losing their virginity.
Yeah.
But and then ends up with twins and is kinda and then Zach gets to go and live her life in the band, and she's
works at Luke's.
It's just really sad.
Yeah,
which is why Dave Rogowski is like this moment in like the he's like the only moment in her life. Like that's it. She gets like 9 episodes of happiness,
and even then, it's like it's a struggle.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, maybe like 2.
Yeah, and it's this moment where, like, you're like, oh, wow, maybe, like, she is a great drummer and maybe she will, like, be in a... And the band does tour for a while. There's this bit where, like, Mrs. Kim has this, like, whole turnaround where she's like, and now I'm going to manage your band and you're going to, like, go on tour. And you're like, oh, maybe, is this the way they give us, like, Lane being, like a functioning musician, you know, a professional musician of some kind? And they take that away from you very quickly.
Yeah.
It's so strange how the show has an occasional commitment to realism that only ever favours the grimmest storyline, the grimmest outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're absolutely right. It's so true. It's like, why couldn't you just go with the fantasy there for a minute?
Yeah. And the thing is, you're a professional musician.
Yeah.
Like...
Huge pause.
Just let that land, everyone.
Let that sit for a little bit. Yes. I'm a professional musician.
No, what I'm saying is, it's like, you don't have to be, like, in Radiohead. Like, we didn't need to have this crazy arena career.
You get your sinks in One Tree Hill. You can get, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't, we could have just had, just to, like, a soft success.
A soft Joff success. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, which is still fine.
It's still good.
Yeah,
Joff, you're really successful.
I have dreams unfulfilled, but it's not. But it's okay.
Rashida Jones was in your music video, and all I want is that for Lane.
Yeah, it would be but she doesn't even get that.
She doesn't even get Rashida.
No, she gets twins. She
gets twins.
That's not going
to... You had kids young. You still got to be a professional musician.
Yeah, it's true.
Come on.
Yeah.
Got the Joff scoop here. With the kids.
You can do it. You can. You can do it. Yeah, plenty of people do it. Look at Kurt Cobain. He seemed fine. You know, it doesn't have to be the end of it, you know. Did Paul McCartney have children?
I think it's important to remember at this juncture that you and I have been in this studio since 10 in the morning and it's now 2:30.
Oh.
If this second half is a bit fruitier than the first.
I feel like this second half, I think this has been more realistic. I think we've been more downbeat. I think we've realised some things about some main characters that have actually really hit home.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Lane's storyline. It hits me every time. Like, what happens to her is harsh.
She should have had an abortion.
Yeah, but the show...
Let's talk about the show's refusal to acknowledge abortions.
It is a weird one, because when it first came out, I think there was sort of, like, American sort of family values things that sort of kind of...
It's a family show, so on that level.
And sort of celebrated it, even though it does sort of attack American family values in a lot of ways. But... Yeah, it is weird that it just never comes up, does it? I guess it just doesn't come up.
Nope, this doesn't come
just
up.
Doesn't come up.
Literally, it comes up once where in the flashback episode where Strobe and Francine, like Strobe says something like, "Well, why doesn't she get rid of it?" And Emily just like stonewalls and like, "Because she's not. That's why." It's like, I just don't believe that Emily Gilmore wouldn't like. This is not the first teen pregnancy in their set.
No.
People get abortions.
Yeah.
Especially people of that class get abortions.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously, we don't want Lorelai to have had an abortion because there would be no TV show.
Gilmore Girl.
Yeah, Gilmore Girl. She went to Harvard, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm also willing to believe that it's like, you know, Lorelai waited so long that it was not an option anymore. But like, I just think that this is an alternate world where Lorelai takes Lane to an abortion clinic in New Haven. And
is this how your spin-off begins?
Yeah. Well, so this is the other thing.
You've been having meetings with Netflix.
I've been having meetings. I will have this, like, this... I just... This whole Wednesday Addams thing of, like, Wednesday having her own spin-off show, and I haven't watched that show, but it looks great. My niece absolutely loves it, but there are some places where the kids go that you're not supposed to follow. And this whole, and like they're having a spin-off that centers only on that character. I think there's so a world, and I would love for a Korean American artist to do something with this, a writer or a performer, to just have a show called Lane, and it starts in like 2000, and you know there's a Rory character, but she's not played by Alexis Bledel, and she is a side character in the way Lane is a side character in that, and we. Get the not necessarily a wish fulfillment, but we get a real story about someone growing up in like a Korean American household in an antique shop, like hiding music under their bed, joining bands, trying to find rebellion on their level, and it's like we finally get the Lane Kim story we deserve, you know?
Because when she comes in, she's been there. She comes a cheerleader. We're like, oh, how did that happen? It's like, that's a really interesting storyline we could have known about.
Yeah,
I'd love to know what goes on at marching band practice.
Yeah, when she touches the guy's hair.
Yeah, Richie's hair. Yeah, like, and then we don't really see that how that goes from there. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really beautiful, like, my so-called life kind of moment. Yeah. It's a very delicate little thing.
What happens next time she goes back into band practice? Like, and she's touched his hair. Like, how? Well, there's so much, and we've. You know, because we're always seeing Rory. Like, but every time we see Rory, in your mind, you're thinking, I wonder what Lane's up to.
What's Lane up to?
And this is why the show would be such a huge success, because it's what we're all wondering.
That's the thing. And the thing is, like, it could barely acknowledge the Gilmore Girls if it wanted to. Because,
still be set there.
Though. Oh, it'd still be set there.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be, you know, Amy Sherman-Palladino.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, executive producing, but then somebody else writes and directs. Basically, I want it to be like a George Lucas. I want her to be the, like, I want, like, Star Wars and Harry Potter or whatever. These are franchises that exist without their original creators to varying levels of success through the lens of other artists. And I think the Gilmore Girls is a rich enough world that someone else could do the same.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sorry you won't ever make a penny out of it if it happens.
You guys can have that one for free. That's for you.
The joy of watching it will be enough payment. Thank you for that.
It will.
Yeah.
It will. But Dave Rogalski himself.
So get back to Dave. That he is the only bit of Lane's story where things really come together for her.
Yeah.
And because she's such a precious character.
Yeah.
I think that's why Dave as well is so, like, he's the man that treats the character that's probably most precious to us, I think.
Yes, that's so true.
He treats her so well.
Yeah.
And, like, just everything he does. I mean, he reads the whole Bible.
He reads the whole Bible.
And I mean, he starts by just, like, learning all these hymns.
Yeah. Well, no, he starts with... So he comes into the dance-a-thon.
Yes.
And she's making the sandwiches, and he comes
what
in...
What time does he get the dance-a-thon?
Like, the time is very elastic on that episode.
Because they start at 6 a.m.
Yeah, and it goes on till 6 a.m. next morning.
And he arrives with 1 hour to go.
So he's there at 5 a.m.
And his excuse for, like, why his parents aren't there is because they're at Bible study. Which I love about Mrs. Kim. It's just like, well, fair enough.
Fair enough. All right, but yeah, my thought was that he was there, that was there the night before. That he rocked up at, like, 10 p.m.
Maybe. I thought they went from the clock to him. There's a scene of the clock and I got 1 hour to go.
Right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe there's a gap between that. Yeah, that
but
would make more sense.
The important thing... is he comes in, he saunters in, and, like, he has a little quick word with Lane, and then Mrs. Kim shows up and she's like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Oh, I heard some people across the street talking about these sandwiches and I had to come in and get one."
Disgusting sandwiches.
Yeah, and it's like this perfect thing of being like, utterly believable, not sarcastic. It's like a line that Jess would deliver in a totally different, like, oh, I know, you're right. Like the way he says it, he's like, yeah, I heard there was something. It's like so likable and so sweet, and it's like a tiniest wink to Lane and to us, the audience. And everything from that point on is like that pitch of like, yeah, I'm just like a really earnest guy, but I've also got a sense of humor about things, and I'm like smart, but not in a showy way.
Yeah, and I'll do. I'll do anything. And he's like, I could learn 4 hours of him. Or, you know, that's not a problem. Yeah, I'll sit there, you know. It's so he's just happy to just try these things. He's a very open character, just open to experiences, to just like, because he's in a band, you know, he wants to just form the band. He sees, you know, she's going to be a great drummer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's...
She's precious and he treats her preciously and we love her for that.
He doesn't, when he gets insecure as well, back to what they're, you know, there are moments when he's under threat. Young Chu comes in and is obviously dating Lane, you know, in as a sort of a cover for...
Yeah.
And there's that moment where he's, I think he's playing with the band and they're playing all these hymns and he has 15 minutes break to run over to see them at the ice hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's in like slightly insecure and maybe jealous, he doesn't play it. And I think Rory says something about how like there's cute jealous and then there's Othello. And it's like, that's the key. It's like every other man
is Othello.
Yeah. And he's like cute jealous. Because it's okay to, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just like, and that's really the crux of Dave. It's like, he's the only one that can handle insecurity and threat in a normal way.
Yeah.
And
it's so strange. And I do think that he would have had his whole, like, they would have continued on.
Yeah.
For a long time. I'm sure there would have been more conflict coming up.
Yeah.
If they had gotten their way.
Which
you
is
know?
Maybe we got spared the conflict. Maybe that's why we idealise him because it's just 9 episodes. Yeah, because they would have definitely stayed together. But then, and it is quite sad that he gets ripped away from us.
He does.
Because of what it means for Lane.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, we get Seth Cohen, so.
Seth Cohen happens but once in a lifetime in an orchid that blooms only for a day. Yeah, I wonder when I saw him on screen and I just experiencing the raw charisma of that actor, it was like, oh, I wonder if they sort of, there was a conversation in the writer's room that's like, okay, we've made the side character's boyfriend more charismatic and beautiful and likable than any other romantic lead in the show.
They must have been like, oh no, what have we done?
Just,
yeah, because he's, but then what would happen if he'd come in and liked Rory, like, would that have worked?
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see romantic conflict between Lane and Rory.
Yeah.
Because they don't really have very much conflict.
No.
And they're also not best friends.
No, Rory's a bad best friend.
Yeah. She's a great best friend to Paris.
Yeah.
Those two are solid.
They're enemies, but yeah.
Yeah,
but
Rory has like an endless tether, an endless attention for Paris's shit. And with Lane, she's like checked out half the time. She's like, oh, yeah.
I know. And she's just saying simple things like, I like...
Oh, yeah, your mom is borderline abusive.
Oh, you met a guy. Oh, you're twins. Oh, yeah. Oh, twins. Whatever. Oh, your boyfriend's moved to LA. Oh,
you hate sex, do you? Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah. I hate that.
So that's... Yeah.
So that was our countdown.
Yeah. I mean, Dave's speech to Miss Kim is probably the... That speech where he just goes through all the different things about... That's kind of, I think if you watch that speech, you're like,
yeah,
where he doesn't smoke and he doesn't play video games, he doesn't drink coffee and all these things. Yeah. And it's just like that, he just sums up exactly why.
Yeah.
He's so great.
Because the thing is, like, he is like, you know, polite, respectful, good grades, doesn't drink coffee, doesn't say out, doesn't do this. And he's like, oh, like, and it's delivered so well.
Yeah.
But he's like, the fact that he is all of the things that an interesting person could do, he doesn't do. And yet he is still so compelling and interesting. And he's not lying to her. He's telling the truth.
Yeah.
And that is the real miracle of that character and why it is so painful that he's ripped away.
Yeah. But he's still here in our hearts and that's why he's number one.
He is. And I'll never watch The OC because I don't want to know what Dave Rialti does
good.
Next.
It's good. The OC is good.
Do you know what? I was actually talking to someone this morning about this and they like, apparently... It has a similar Gilmore Girls thing of like looking at the rich through the lens of the poor.
Absolutely. I mean, it's weird how obsessed America is with its class system, like American TV is with its, considering it sort of doesn't think it has one.
Yeah.
But TV, obviously, it is kind of the same thing. So it makes sense that you went there.
Yeah. We should go because we have been here for basically a full working day.
have we covered everything?
I think we should do a quick shot across the bow at all the men that we couldn't cover because they were also Rans. We'll just throw them out there and give a one or two line review.
Okay.
All right, Digger. Jason Styles is Digger.
Quite good banter. Like, he's quite funny. He's good with Lorelai as just like, but they should just form like a stand-up, do some stand-up together or something.
Start do an improv class together.
And I do love the fact that he's there when Luke and Lorelai first kiss, and he's like, and then he just doesn't ever come out. He goes to the loo and he just never comes back out, and they're just kissing on the porch.
Is that what
happens? I never see him again.
That's it.
Just like,
it's so funny with a show that's like so like all about its characters and its relationship arcs or whatever, sometimes they just write people out. Like fucking Sam? Is that his name?
Alex.
Same name.
Forgettable. Yeah. Sam.
She like does an overnighter with him to fucking New York, and we never see him again.
Yeah.
Done.
And I watched the other day the episodes. And, I mean, Alex, forgettable. Even when you're watching it, you're kind of forgetting him.
Yeah.
In the moment.
Yeah. And he looks like you really like her. He looks like Lauren Graham. It's like, don't like it. Moving on. Digger, I like his dog in his apartment. And I also like that she gets to her own bedroom. Oh, she can watch movies.
Yeah.
That rocks.
That is
That fucking looks like it rocks.
Yeah.
Who else is there? Penelin Lott.
Well, of course, Penelin, once she comes in, she does, like, Emily is great once the Penelin Lott storylines comes in.
Yeah, which is Richard's old fiancé.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do love what her existence, and I just love the way Emily says Penelin Lott.
Penelin Lott. Penelin
Lott.
It's
just so good.
It's heard her most like Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah.
Penelin Lott.
It comes before, she does a Penelin Lott line before she does that line about buy me a bow and drive me to
Reno.
Yeah, because I am open for business. So she's
good.
Yeah, Penelin Lott's great for that. Just her name is enough.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Love it. Who else is there? Chad Michael Murray. Can't remember his real name.
Tristan.
Tristan.
He's just nothing. Like, I think they wanted there to be tension there, but there really isn't. Even when you watch it again, I'm just like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad I guess he was sort of like a proto Logan. We're sort of men, you don't. He's too much. And him calling her Mary the whole time—that's quite a Logan thing to do. I mean, obviously Logan calls her Ace.
Ace.
Oh, I can't bear.
Nicknames in the show are so cringe.
I know. I do think the nicknames is the key to the character, like, because Christopher's always calling Laura like
Lore,
and it's just like, oh.
Come on, Lore.
And then Ace, and then Mary. And
I was getting very dissertation-y with you on the text the other day. I was like. Lore refers to the lore that has passed between them, the private legend of Lorelai and Christopher that is maintained only by themselves.
I really hope that's true. I really hope that's why they wrote it.
I don't think
that.
So. The thing is, it's such a deep show that you could be convinced into thinking anything is true. You know?
And now, all the sort of discourse around it has got so deep.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like that's where we will.
Yeah.
That's not unbelievable that would be something that. Nice little Reddit thread on that.
Chewy little red thread there. Who else is there?
Taylor. What are your thoughts on Taylor?
Taylor Dosey. Yeah, what do you think his sexual persuasion is? I think it's probably nothing.
Yeah.
I think gay, but nothing. Kirk?
I do love Kirk, and I love Kirk's appearance, and I love the fact that he's this sort of parody of the man as a provider, and he has no one to provide for.
And
so he just keeps like, he's just like doing all these jobs and saving all this money. He saved like $250,000.
Oh, yeah, because of all his jobs.
For no one. He was with his mum. But he's just always working around the clock, just like that's.
Yeah.
Because that's what, again, you know, that's what men at this point in the 2000s, like, maybe if we just keep earning money.
Yeah.
But he's got no one.
Oh, when he asked Lorelai out, though.
I know.
And he says,
and he keeps coming back for the answer.
Yeah, and he says, he asks her out, and she's like, "Oh God!" And he walks away, and then he just turns back and goes, "I think you might be the prettiest girl I've ever seen."
I know.
And then he stops and goes, accepting some certain adult videos. And he kind of ruins the line, but it is sort of heartbreaking. Like.
And he makes that film, which,
oh my God, his film!
And the film's incredible because I'm watching it this time around. I realized the film is a film about someone going for a Friday night dinner with their...
Oh, my God.
That's what his film is. He goes for dinner with the girlfriend
yeah.
to meet the father, to meet the parents.
Yeah.
Like, he's made a film about Friday Night Dinner.
That's so and that's funny. In... I can't believe I never noticed that. I've seen that episode so many times.
Yeah. And I just watched this and I was like, oh, my God, that's what he's doing. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. I love Kirk. Yeah, brilliant, man.
So good. I think we talked about Marty already, but I do feel bad for that character.
Yeah, Marty has a season 7 ending. I feel really sad. Like when
what happens again? He like
so he comes back and he denies he knows her.
Oh right.
Bizarrely, so they get on. They're quite sweet early on.
Doesn't like, he? His girlfriend is Kristen Ritter, yeah. And they all go for
Lucy,
dinner.
Yeah, and yeah. Then, and Logan obviously knows who Marty is and knows yeah. They know each other, and he's the one that says they know each other.
Like yeah. Even though Rory Marty introduced us.
Yeah, even yeah. Though Rory has told him not to say
yeah.
That, he's like, Marty introduced us. And obviously that causes friction between Lucy yeah. and Rory. That's just a weird thing for Marty to do. Like,
because
then we end up, my sort of memory now of Marty is him being like psychotic. Like, that's just a weird thing. Why wouldn't you say, oh my God, it's you?
Yeah, again, it feels like a victim of the Paladino
yeah.
Exodus.
Yeah, totally. Else. But I do like Marty. And I think, like, early on in our email chain, I was like, I do think Marty was good for her.
Yeah.
I wish that she just... I think she needs, like, a boy who doesn't want to have sex with her. I think it would be really good for her.
A gay man?
Yeah, it could be a gay man. Or just, like, a man who doesn't fancy her. Like, I know it's crazy.
She should get with a guy who does not fancy her.
She doesn't get with him. No, she just have him in her life.
Oh, right.
So I must say, no, she doesn't have to. No, she's not going to have sex with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's excited.
Yeah, no, it would be nice for her to have a friend.
Yeah, just a friend who, like, gave her, like, because I think she's sort of, I think she wants one.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably, like, her daddy issues and stuff going on there. But she wants a man. And sometimes she ends up sort of making men romantic
yeah.
partners when they don't need to be.
Which is very, again, it tracks with how a 20-year-old behaves. Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes sense of, like, you know, you wanting a male friend so badly and wanting that insight, but also not knowing how to relate to men unless you're trying to impress them or shag them or whatever, or just get their appreciation. And of course they get confused by that,
yeah.
You know?
Because that's like what people do when they're teenagers. It's like suddenly they like...
People do it as adults, you know?
I want to be friends with... I want to be like, man, I want to be friends with a girl.
Yeah.
I haven't really spoken to them since I was 4.
Yeah.
I guess I'll date them then.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what the whole... That's where we find Rory at this point, where men are like, I'd like to... Like, Dean is like that classic example. He's like probably never really spoken to
yeah.
a girl. And so this is the best he can do. Maybe we should be more forgiving.
The part where we talk about you, a successful Lane Kim.
Oh, yeah.
You are the Lane Kim story that actually we all want.
Yeah, I guess I am.
You are.
I was brought up in a strict Korean household.
You were. You know?
Yeah. Well, you never see my father.
No.
I do love the fact that Mr. Kim is just like, not even.
Doesn't yeah, really, it's for not that even male like, character, like a Maris yeah. thing in Frasier. And Amy Sherman probably is a very like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
we just forgot to write him.
Don't even write him. I didn't even write.
She doesn't care about men.
I know. I just, don't you even want him to have like an insignificant role? Like, nah, I just don't even bother writing him. Just never see him. Allude to him.
Yeah, she'll just say my parents.
Yeah.
Nothing else. But Geoff, you are in several bands.
Yes. I am. Yeah. Oh, do you want to know what I'm done?
Yes.
What I've been doing is
fucking talk about your work.
I've got an album out with Legends of Country at the moment called Anything But Country, and that's my most recent work.
Nice.
And then The Boily Slightly Too is... we haven't done much since the Christmas single, because I love Christmas.
Yeah.
And snow.
And
because,
snow.
Yeah.
You should be the Stars Hollow Troubadour.
I know. I love snow, so I would...
I can't believe it's taken me so long to say this or to ask this, but what is your opinion of the use of music on the show, which is very unique?
I think they do. I mean, it's great that, like, it's very genuine. Like, the people, the Bell and Sebastian, like, they get that the references are good.
Yeah.
I think they're all pretty... And I love the Troubadour. You know, it's great.
You love Grantley Phillips.
Yeah, and the la la la. I mean, it's all... I think they do it. Yeah, it's great. And I think as teenagers, they've got... And the OC does the same thing. You know, they are pretty good at getting their references.
Yeah.
We didn't get a sync, though. We didn't get... We weren't on... I would have loved
you
to.
You would have
Because we were on One Tree Hill. So we were like... We won great... You know,
really
so
big
we,
deal over here.
We did some... We had some nice ones around that time. But my favourite shows, I never got in. Buffy, the OC, and Kill More Girls eluded us. Maybe in the they'll use this in A Year in the Life.
Oh my God.
They won't.
Yeah, but, so there's talk of A Year in the Life too, isn't there?
Yeah. There's always talk, but yeah, there is talk.
There's always talk.
I'd be happy to go. I feel like the first Year in the Life was all about like, oh my God, look who's back, look who's back.
Yeah, yeah.
But we didn't actually get enough time to sort of, it was just like a sort of reunion show.
Yeah.
And although there were some sweet, like some moments, like great moments in it. I think it was worth watching. I know a lot of people haven't even watched it.
Yeah, I don't blame them for that either, because it definitely is depressing.
Yeah, no, it's depressing because
yeah,
it gives you like a sense of your own, like past, like,
your own lost potential.
Yeah. I was going to say yeah, mortality, but yeah, lost potential as well. Yeah,
because like, that's what that show ended up being about, was lost potential. Yeah, really. And
so it's a hard watch.
It would be interesting to watch Year in the Life too, because now Rory's a single mother, because that was now
yeah,
the famous four words.
Yeah, who's the father?
Hogan. Horrible Logan.
I like the answer that it's like, who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, because men don't matter. And that's the lesson. All right, I think we're going to go now.
Okay. Well, it's been great.
It's been really good. This has been my best work day in forever.
I've absolutely loved watching Gilmore Girls probably for 12 hours a day for the last month. But I think everyone, all my friends are excited about me returning to their lives.
Yeah, Gab's definitely very excited to not be hearing Carole King every 45 minutes.
The thing is, I'm also like,
I don't want to leave.
Can't wait to get back. I feel so safe there.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll just watch.
I'm going to continue.
I might just watch.
Yeah.
Just a couple more seasons.
Just a couple more. Try Year in the Life again. Why not? It might hang better around the second time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.